Okay, let's begin. I am Lanice Antoine Shelley, and I'll be your host through constructive, healing-based conversations designed to illuminate the adoptee, parents, and the adoption curious. We center the topics around community, mentorship, leadership, and healing, so you get a multidimensional view that is ultimately empowering. These are the voices who could not speak when they were young. Okay, before we get into it, I wanted to share with you some new offerings. We've just partnered with Isaac Etter's company called Identity, who provides adoption consulting and short practical guide pamphlets, a practical guide to transracial adoption, and a practical guide to Black hair care. As a listener, you get 15% off. Just click the link in the show notes where you can find all references and hot topics that are talked about in each episode. And since you're listening, I just wanted to thank those of you who've rated and reviewed this podcast, because every 5-star click helps remind these platforms that our work matters and helps me keep going. So those of you who are getting so much out of these conversations and have taken the 30 seconds to write a positive takeaway, I see you and I thank you. Those who haven't yet, now is the time, my love. Let's talk about it on Instagram after you go ahead and click 5 stars and write a review. Hi, friends. Hope this week was good to you. Those who know me or follow me on Instagram at Young Adoptee or Lantoinez are aware of how much I love homeopathic methodologies and mindfulness practices such as yoga, meditation, plant-based lifestyle, and even cruelty-free cosmetics. My brain and heart was in pure bliss during this conversation because I was learning so much. We have a light worker in our midst, fam. Lorae Gerald is unadulterated magic. I want to acknowledge that the dominant belief system in adoption is Christianity. It dates back to missionaryism and conservative views of the 40s and 50s. You all should read The Poisonwood Bible by Barbara Kingsolver. It's one of my favorite novels about a family from the South who go to the Congo to quote-unquote educate the natives. And they get the learning of a lifetime. It's so good. I think I read that book 3 times. Barbara Kingsolver is actually one of my favorite novelists. So now, on this podcast, we accept all belief systems from paganistic, earthy, and agnostic to whatever you like. This episode explores the mystic and magical and how healing is found by tuning into the possibilities of breathwork and energy. Today, we speak with Lorae Gerald, aka the Adoptee Chameleon. Lorae is a trauma-informed kundalini yoga instructor, intuitive, tarot and tea reader, and Reiki healer. You can find her on Instagram sharing her gifts as a healer through movement and mindful practices. Today, we talk about so many things. We talk about the adoption summit she attended called Untangling Our Roots. We talk about Lorae's medium energy work, her kundalini practice, the healing powers of wearing colors to brighten your mood, the baby scoop era that she was born into, and the complexities of same-race adoption, the difference between acute trauma, chronic trauma, and complex trauma. We also unpack how she became the adoptee chameleon. We end with how you can change your energy through breathwork, and she even leads us through a breathwork practice at the very end. My favorite quote for this episode is, "Your energy follows your breath," which I'm sure is resonant to so many people right now. As we are all trying to catch our breath, we are all trying to balance and regulate our energy because this world is just wild. It's wild out there, fam. I loved listening to this episode. It was truly a masterclass. Lorraine's beautiful aura will be felt, I'm sure. I'm sure you'll be able to feel it from wherever you happen to be. So let's lean in.
I am coming down from the Untangling Our Roots Summit that I was just at. I was around over 200 adoptees, birth parents, all of that in Louisville, Kentucky.
Oh my goodness. I didn't know about that conference.
Yeah.
How was it? Like, what did it entail?
Wow. it was my first summit. So I was a first timer.
Okay.
And wow, it was a lot and overwhelming and exciting. And I learned a lot, and I'm still, as a matter of fact, after we're done today, I'm going to go back and, connect with all the connections I made, do follow-ups and things. And then tomorrow night, the group's Right to Know and a National Association, Adoptees and Parents, those two groups were the ones that brought it. They're having a recap. So I'm going to do that tomorrow night. It's on Eventbrite.
That's awesome. And so are there speakers and classes and those yes. sort of events?
Yes, it was three packed days. We got to watch Reckoning with the Primal Wound, and the director, Rebecca, was there. We got to watch Ghost Kingdom, and the director, Brian, was there. There were authors, speakers, classes. It was very, very full. I thought I could do everything and realized quickly that no. luckily, they did record the classes and stuff, and so we can pay for it and have it. And I was like, that's good, because I'm going to need to go sit down and watch those here, because mm-hmm. I was too busy talking to a lot of people and missed some.
Where do you stay?
I stayed in the hotel where it was at.
Okay. That's
but some people stayed off site, but yeah, I just, meals were included with it. So I just stayed right there.
How much was everything? If you don't mind me asking.
Oh, no. I mean, yeah, exactly. It was $400 for, I think that's what I paid. I had, I bought it early before Christmas when they did a pre-price. So it kind of went up, but I got it at the cheapest. I want to say it was less than that. But, and it paid for everything. Now the hotel room was not included with that. And of course, airfare is not included with that.
Yeah.
But I thought that wasn't bad for 3 days of food and all of those speakers and those movies. And we had comedians. So we had entertainment. We had, it was a lot. It was a lot. And those people did a lot of work setting, all of that up and making it happen.
Did you gain connections, lasting friendships and that sort of thing?
Well, what was really cool was like you and I in these adoptee spaces, we talk to a lot of these people and see each other in Zoom or meet each other like you and I are today. And then you do at some point like this come together like I did with so many people I'd talked to, and I was like, oh my gosh, look at you. I'm touching you, So it's like, you're not just there on the screen, me cheering you on and liking your content, you're a human being here and I'm hugging you. So there was a lot of that, like surreal. And I had a few people running up to me, adopted chameleon. I was like, what? I've never heard my name screamed before. So yes. I was like, what?
And of course,
then I fangirled on people too. So I was like, oh my gosh, I've always wanted to meet you. So it was a lot of that.
That's great. I mean, that's a great segue to Adoptee Chameleon. Like, where did you find that? Where did that spring from?
Oh, silly me. I thought I completely made this up, but no, I did not. I just always thought, a chameleon, they can either blend in very well, they adapt, or they can be vibrant, and stand out. So yeah. they do what they need to do to survive, right? They're surviving.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like how I felt. In the beginning, I just adapted to survive. And then once the fog came out, I could show my colors. And I also use a butterfly in my logo for transformation, because the butterfly goes in the cocoon. And that's kind of how I felt too, in that mm-hmm. cocoon, and then coming out of the cocoon into a butterfly. So adaptation and transformation. But a chameleon can be one, or add the butterfly.
I love that. Yeah, I love that, because the metamorphosis mm-hmm. of life, right? And it gives both a sense of hope, a sense mm-hmm. of coming into oneself. And what did you use to come into yourself, to blossom and bloom and turn into the butterfly, do you think? Because you have so many different modalities that you use that are available on your website. Like, which ones helped you the most?
Well, in 2016, I came out of what I call the human fog. And when that happened, I still knew there was an issue with adoption, just like I did all my life, but I still wasn't like, that's what caused that. You know, you know, it wasn't the answer at that point. It was still like, there's an issue there, but we've got something else we need to work on right now, like this world and how you're in this world and how you feel about it now, because you're feeling about it way different than you did just like a minute ago. So I started going to lots of classes here where I live. They would have mediums speak, energy workers, authors, different people, and using different types of modalities of spirituality or energy work. And I had been working with a woman that taught Kundalini yoga. I started working at Whole Foods Market in 2010. And that was my first introduction to Kundalini yoga. And she used to do these wonderful things called yoga on the spot yachts. And we went in the morning, we would do these. And I always loved it, never missed it. And I took her classes. She's still doing them. She's a wonderful human being. Thank you, Celeste. And in 2016, when I was coming out of my human fog, there was this, she said, would you like to do a 40-day sadhana? And I said, sure, absolutely. Anything, Celeste. What is this 40-day sadhana that I just paid for and signed up? And that's kind of how it started. And a sadhana is just a practice. You do something for 40 days. And in Kundalini yoga, it's usually a mudra and a mantra done together for anywhere from 11 to 33 minutes a day. And it literally becomes part of you. So this mudra and mantra, this chanting and this energy vibration fills you up. It starts filling you energetically, whether you understand the language or not. It's more tones, you know, like Om. Most people know Om, the sound of the universe, correct?
Yes.
Right. So there's a lot of that. And I always explain these in my classes, what these words mean. But it's a tone. You'll feel it in your energetic body. And because I started there, I started going, huh, what's happening inside? So Kundalini yoga made me become aware of what I was actually feeling inside myself. And because I started becoming more aware of these feelings, I had always been highly intuitive. But, you know, society and things that happen in your life make you kind of stomp that down and you kind of put a mask on. And like I said, that mask came off. So my true self started coming forward, and those beliefs and the things that I used to do started coming back to the forefront. And with the Kundalini yoga, it was allowing me to feel it. So the classes came into play, and I started doing more and more and more of it, and allowing myself to fully trust my intuition and not just go, that's just crazy talk in the back of my head. You know, it was my guiding light, literally. And I needed to not stomp it down, and I needed to trust that.
I'm so fascinated by Kundalini yoga. I actually practiced a little bit of it in Canada, and we had this ferocious instructor. named Claire, and she was wearing all white. And mm-hmm. she mentioned something about using color mm-hmm. in the way that you dress to emanate what it is that you are trying to exude, to draw in what you're trying to manifest, to really be intentional about what you're wearing. Can you speak to that?
Well, I'm glad you asked, because I know they can't see, but I am wearing a pink shirt today. I am not a pink girl, but as we're recording, it's the pink full moon. So I'm embracing the energy of the pink full moon with color on me. And yes, Kundalini yoga instructors, traditional Kundalini yoga instructors will be wearing all white. They usually have their hair pulled back and a band and all white, and they'll be dressed in head to toe with white because that is the highest energy. And it also, it is the shining white light, you know, when you talk about the divine light. So white is what mm-hmm. typically we wear. But yes, wearing pink today, that pink full moon. Chakras, when I teach Kundalini yoga, I talk about the chakra system. And I use the colors of the chakras when we're focusing on something. Like if I'm doing something that is a grounding exercise that I want people to focus on the root chakra, I will talk about the color red. I might say something like, think of a red strawberry or something that you like. What's your favorite color of red? See that. And I've discovered that some people are very visual inside their mind and some are not. So I go, if you can't see red, feel red. What does red feel like to you? I'm a trauma-informed yoga instructor. So as you said, your Claire instructor was a bit intense. I'm trauma-informed, so I allow people choice in the routine. And I know what you mean about some Kundalini yoga instructors. It is very much the way that it was always done. And I very much follow that and thank the teachers before me always. But I have to also reach people where they're at, and traumatized people sometimes will need more agency than strict any type of any workout need has, you know. I like to give people choice. It's their routine. They're not there mm-hmm. for me. They're there for them. Mm. So you're not there to bend or stretch like I do. You're there to breathe and become aware of you.
I appreciate you saying that, because I just came back from a yoga class, and the teacher, in her effort to make the experience extraordinary, like every class, she, for me, takes me out of the meditation, because she makes it about like the external, mm-hmm. what's happening externally in the class. Like she has, today she had like intention cards, which sometimes I might be in the mood for something like that. But lately I go in just for me. Like to work out whatever it is that I need to work out. I don't want to interact. I don't want to breathe for anyone else. I'm barely breathing for myself.
Right.
Like, so it's been an interesting time practicing with a variety of teachers that are so intent on making this experience transformative, mm-hmm. but they aren't allowing you to be where you are,
right?
Which is soft, quiet, gentle, no sudden movements. I go really slowly. I like to work into the isometric holds and like find the transitions and that sort of thing. So I appreciate you saying that, because yoga can be intimidating for a lot of people. Right. And I think a lot of times we feel that we have to look a certain way or adhere to certain rules.
Yes. And one of my taglines that I say every class, and my students will know this one if they're listening, find your flow and go. Because I want them to find their flow, their rhythm. And some days we do want to move a little bit more. Some days we want to go more inward. So it's permission. It's like, this is your practice. And I know what you mean. People wanting to look a certain way, wear certain clothes, bend a certain way. The yoga studio can be intimidating. I teach on Zoom mainly because of that, because I want people to feel comfortable. Some people just go, I'm in my pajamas today. I'm like, that's fine. Are you comfortable? Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Then let's, you can work out in your pajamas. I don't care. As long as you are clothed and we're doing Zoom together, that's all I care about, you know? But it is, it's their experience. And I look up on Zoom, you know, just to make sure people are doing okay. Nothing has happened to them. And sometimes they aren't doing what I'm doing. They're doing something longer, or they have just sat there and just are breathing. That's fine. Perfect. I actually really liked seeing someone that has stepped out of what I'm doing and has just figured out what they need right then.
Yeah. And I enjoy people who give me space to find that out on my terms. Yeah. I think that's so important. And one thing that I took away from learning Kundalini from Claire is wearing white helps you have a sense of confidence, and groundedness in yourself. So a lot of times when I am not feeling confident or not feeling sociable, I'll wear white. If I'm going into a very complicated meeting, I'll wear white. And I feel that glow that you talked about. I feel like I'm emanating powers that I don't personally have.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what a lot of these crystals, colors, essential oils, that's what they are. They're these tools that if maybe we can't get there at the moment, they can help us a little bit. I bought more white clothing since I became a Kundalini yoga instructor, and apparently some pink now too, just to embrace different things, different colors, to have a full rainbow in my wardrobe and in my home. I know they can't see it, but behind me, there's lots of colors, isn't there? I used to be, oh, we're just going to have neutrals everywhere. No, embrace color. It does have a vibrant energy. Each color has a wavelength. They are energy too. That's how we can see it through our eyes, right? The different colors coming through, we can see it through our eyes, and it's a wavelength. Just like the energy around us.
You have some wellness tips on your website that are really awesome. Like, what are some tips that you can share with people now, and then they can visit your website to get more?
Well, in the before times, I was a marketing manager for Whole Foods Market. So I got to talk about food pretty much constantly, and wellness tips, supplements, the things we're talking about now, yoga, mindfulness practices of all kinds. Food was something that I was passionate about. In my adoptive family, we had a farm, or not a farm, a garden, a big garden. So I worked in a lot. Did not like that as a child because I was stuck out there for way too many hours, but I did know what real food tasted like because we canned our own food. We grew our own food. I'm a vegetarian, but at the time my parents, you know, would have a hog slaughtered and things like that. So, and my father hunted. So we pretty much, that's how we fed ourselves back then. My family was, did not have a lot of money. I was kind of an opposite adoptee. My biological family had more means and opportunities than my adopted family. So it's kind of the opposite. Found out later.
That's fascinating. Yes. Can you unpack that just a little bit? Because that is a narrative that a lot of people aren't aware happens. And it actually happens quite frequently, but it's more hush hush, right? These are the families that don't want to talk about it. So now I'm curious and want to talk about it.
No, we definitely can, because this was something I wanted to talk about. Was I am a baby scoop era. I'm a BSE. You might hear BSE, baby scoop era. This is the time after about 1945, after World War II, till the mid 1970s. Some people say 80s, when approximately 4 million children were either coerced, straight up taken, removed from their families because, God forbid, a single woman, and I use that word correctly there, have a child out of wedlock. And they just thought babies were blank slates. Georgia Tan had a lot to do with this, too. You can look her up. She was a child trafficker. But about 4 million mothers and children were separated because of shame of society and, well, religion in general. So the babies were sold off to strangers and just said, there you go. Never talk about that again. That's just done and over with. So yes, my parents were same race domestic, but I always knew this wasn't someone in my family. They were lovely people, but both of my parents had trauma. My mother couldn't have children. She had trauma. She had a forced hysterectomy and couldn't have children. Yes, that was legal back then. The man that she was married to prior to my adopted father, she went in for a gallbladder surgery. He wanted a hysterectomy. So when she came to, she could no longer have children. Talk about trauma. She was a wonderful woman, so traumatized. She needed help, not a baby. My father was a Korean War vet. He used to transport the dead bodies back to the States. Another hugely traumatized individual. But they were told, get a baby. Baby's going to make it all better. No, I had just lost my mother, which was basically my parasympathetic nervous system. And now I was traumatized for the rest of my life because I didn't know what was happening. And I went into survival mode. These lovely people that wanted a baby, nothing wrong with them, but I couldn't fix their traumas. And that's what we have to talk about. You can't just take a baby and make your family and all of a sudden everything's okay. That's just the beginning. That baby is now traumatized permanently for life, which will need help, which is what we're talking about with the Kundalini, the energy work, all of these modalities that we have to find out which one works for us to get us to this place where we can speak about our stories.
Wow. That is such an important share. And thank you for offering that up to everyone. Sure. That babies do not fix trauma. And so many adoptive parents have unrealized, unaddressed trauma, and they believe that a child will save their marriage. A child will heal that emptiness that is embedded in them. And that is never the case, whether it be biological or an adoption.
Exactly.
So you're a same race adoptee.
Yes.
What sort of issues that you mentioned before come up, even though you're the same race? Because on this podcast a lot, I have international adoptees come mm-hmm. through, and we talk about the complexities of interracial adoption. What sort of complexities happen within the same race adoption?
Right. And I have listened to that, and transracial adoption, my heart goes out to losing, you know, not only their culture, their family, their country. But a lot of people really do think that same race, well, that's easy. You know, it's the same race. There shouldn't be a problem there. But there is, because we know who our biological family are. When the baby is born, the baby only knows that mother, correct? That's the only person that that baby knows. We know them on a physical and spiritual and an energetic level. When we come out, the baby's parasympathetic nervous system is not fully functioning. So the birth trauma, because there it is a trauma coming into this world, the mother holds the baby and lets the baby know they're safe. The baby knows the mother. Everything's good. In adoption, lots of times now, they even have the adoptive parents there holding the baby as they're born. Again, it even if these people are wonderful, same race, everything, the baby, you're a stranger. And that child, the baby is now traumatized, wondering where is the rest of my nervous system? Where is the person that I've, you know, been waiting to meet? Where is that person? They usually will just finally go into a freeze state and stop crying. And that's what happened to me. My adopted mother said I was such a good baby. I never cried. And yeah.
That's a bad sign.
Yeah, I bet I didn't. I bet.
Yeah.
So, yes. But once we start aging and learning and speaking and talking and starting to find ourselves, 5, 6, 7, 8, really about 10 years old when it's really probably going to kick in, you will start seeing, because you have no genetic mirror. I mean, it's still, there's no genetic mirror there, because they don't have your eyes, your face, your hands, your ears, your feet. That's not there. With all the love in the world, that's not going to be there. My adopted mother only had a fifth grade education. I had 145 IQ. It was a mishmash. I was held back. In first grade, I was the first child in the school to ever score 100% on the achievement test. They wanted to skip me a grade. My parents.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. I was excited and wanted to move on. I was ready. My parents said no. And still to this day, that one still is one of those that I'm like, you held me back. Still to this day, I feel that one. And by third grade, my mother couldn't even do schoolwork with me. My father only had like a semester of college. So they really didn't know what to do with me. So I excelled, thinking that'll make me special and worthy, because I was having feelings inside that, you know, I didn't understand. I was told it was God's will. I was told I should be grateful. I was told I should be chosen. So when I was having feelings that didn't align with the narrative that was being told to me, I thought I was a demon because I was not having the proper thoughts and feelings. And I was sent to church a lot, and good children have those thoughts and feelings. So I was a little bit worried about myself. I was like, oh, we can't tell anybody that, because I'd been shown that to prove your worthiness to God, that, you know, you might have to kill your child. And I was adopted. And I was like, I was already thrown away once. Are my parents going to have to go kill me to prove their worthiness to God? I was scared a lot about a religion. I was really terrified of things when I was a child, because that's what I was being told. So that's when you learn to be quiet. And adoptees learn this, whether religion sometimes is involved or not. I know religion is a lot of, goes along with a lot of the traumas that a lot of adoptees
have. And it fuels the majority of adoption.
Right. Yes, exactly. It's at the root of it, you know. So it definitely flames this narrative that, you know, you're saving a child, but in all reality, a family has to be separated for another family to come together. And that's the narrative that people really don't want to have to face. Like people like me and you, when we speak about it, we get pushback, correct? Because it makes people uncomfortable that we're speaking our truth. And not hearing that we're not saying anything bad about our adopted parents. We're just telling our story. So.
Even so, if we're playing the game that this is unconditional love, this is a true family.
Yes.
Then we can speak freely.
Exactly.
Right? And we can speak about missteps and mishaps, because biological kids do that all the time.
Yes.
So if we're equal, then why does it matter if you raised us in a safe, protective, very nurturing household? You have nothing to fear.
Right. Exactly. Very well said. Very well said. I know. My adoptive parents made mistakes, but They also were told lies. So I do have to look at that through their lens. But then there are things that I can absolutely call them out for, because that was just bad behavior. But I also do understand that they were lied to. They were told, that's blank slate, you just take that baby home. They'll never know. Even though they did tell me all my life that I was adopted, I wasn't lied to like some late discovery adoptees are. It still doesn't change the fact that those feelings, you know, you just know there's something that's underlying that no one's talking about, you know, the elephant in the room, as they say. Children feel these things. Yeah. They have a lot more complex feelings than adults give them credit for. And they can understand things too, especially if they're allowed to.
Yeah, especially if they're allowed to. And a lot of times our voices are taken away. Because again, if what we say is uncomfortable, if what we say causes unease, then it's stifled, it's repressed, and it's silenced. And so it's imperative that adoptive parents who are hoping to adopt, or they've adopted and their kids are grown or their kids are growing, that they understand that they cannot take our voice away.
Yes.
And we need to be treated as an equal part of society.
Yes.
And we cannot be put in the cupboard like Harry Potter.
Yes.
You know?
Speaking of an adoptee.
Exactly. And so there's numerous stories of orphans being treated a certain way. And I'm not saying that happened to me, and I don't believe that happened to you. But my point is that we need to give these children room to grow, to blossom, to transform into those butterflies.
Yes.
And stifling them intellectually, culturally, spiritually, yes, emotionally, just compounds the trauma that is intrinsic to adoption.
Right. And there are statements that are said, because we've all heard them, and they are like, this was God's choice and you were chosen. My adopted mother used to say this to me all the time. And I know she wasn't doing this to hurt me, but this is something, if you say this, it's a dead end for a conversation. She would say things like, why are you so angry? Don't you know we love you? Okay, that's the end game. We love you. You can't be angry. You can't have a feeling. That's it. And like I said, she didn't have much of an education. So she really thought her love could fix anything. And that's just not true. If your child here in the United States goes through one of those horrific shootings, right? They've been traumatized. You're going to love your child. Your child may go through something immediately. Your child may go through something 10, 20 years down the road from that trauma. But that trauma happened. You can't love trauma away. And that's why I talk about this so much, because we can prevent a lot of infant adoption. And if people are truly wanting to help children, there are about 400,000 children that could use a temporary home or sometimes a permanent home here in the United States. And that really could be helped. But people are waiting for a baby because it's a supply and demand business here in the United States.
And there's a misconception that trauma is mitigated when it's an infant.
Yes.
And that is a fallacy. Oh, and a lot of people are unaware about that, that that trauma is trauma. It just, like, red is red. Pink is pink. It is what it is. And it doesn't matter what form you're trying to put this adoption in, because it will always be that color. it will always be that texture of existence for that child.
Pre-verbal trauma. I'm sorry.
No, please,
pre-verbal trauma. Also, mm-hmm. there's acute trauma, chronic trauma, and complex trauma. Acute is the one-time situation where a therapist can take you out of that one-time situation and show you where you're safe, right? That, like with things with EMDR and mindfulness practices, these are therapeutic ways that they take that trauma and try to show you you're safe. You're safe now. The chronic is prolonged and repeated. This is your PTSD. And this is harder because it has gone on for a long time, the trauma, and it has repeated. So the therapist has to show you that there are people that are safe. There are places that are safe. It's not going to repeat anymore. Then you have the complex, which is what the pre-verbal is. This is CPTSD. This is the trauma that is not only repeated and prolonged, but it's usually typically interpersonal, and it is multiple traumatic events. This is where it gets a little bit harder, especially my therapist and I, we talk about this, because I don't have a safe space. There's no pre-verbal safe space for me. So I have to create the safe space and find the safe space and make it myself, which we can do, but this trauma will always be there. It's always going to be in the back of my mind. Hopefully this is where the flow state is, where it's there. I know it's there, but I'm flowing along with my daily in a neutral state. I can function, right? I'm going along in my daily, but that trauma every now and then will just come booming right to the front, you know, and that's that repeated and prolonged that happens over and over to people with complex traumas and chronic traumas.
Thank you for that. That's so in-depth and comprehensive. Thank you. I want to transition to a place of solutions, right? Mm-hmm. And we began at solutions with all of the modalities like Kundalini yoga. And I know you have extensive knowledge on energy, breath work, and quantum physics.
Expensive on quantum physics, but I can talk about it a little bit.
Okay. Well, let's do the elevator pitch of quantum physics that you know, and then we'll just end with some energy and breath work.
Nice. So I had in my coming out of the human fog, I studied philosophy and physics and things like that to understand energy, because I am one of those people that, you know, when they go, the woo-woo things happen, there's always an explanation. And I'm like going, but sometimes just woo-woo things happen and you can just have fun with it too. But I also do like to know why those woo-woo things happen. Why did that just happen? I'm not saying it wasn't real. I'm not saying that wasn't exactly what just happened, you know, but mm-hmm. that was a little, you know, we don't understand why. So I look a lot of those things up, and I came across the quantum theory of consciousness by Penrose and Himeroff. And you can look, please do look this up. There are lots of videos on YouTube and writings all over about this. And maybe someone else's brain can go a little more in depth to this. But basically, there are microtubules in our brain, and the neurons that are communicating through that are fractals. And fractals exist outside of 2D and 3D consciousness. They're outside of this realm. This is kind of going to like the Akashic Record, if people have heard of that, or unity consciousness. That would probably be another term for it. There's different words. We all have a language for these things, right? But it's the like an energetic field that's all around us that we don't see, but it exists. We know there's energy there. And these fractals are what they're saying is what goes through the consciousness. So we have to bring consciousness into us when we become born, right? When we breathe and we become conscious and aware and we get that birth certificate, right? We're now alive. And even in philosophies and religion, they say, you know, with breath comes life. Pranayama, what I teach, is the energy of life with the breath. We follow the energy with the breath. So this consciousness has come into us, and they're saying that these fractals are what is carrying this consciousness. So I found that fascinating. That's the short version of it. And there is way, way, way more of it. Is what I'm
I'll put all of this in the show notes so people can do their own investigation.
Yes. It's fun too, because one video you may resonate with more than another. So that's why I always like people to go ahead and I'll put it out there and look it up and see which one resonates with you. Yeah. And for the trauma part, I studied polyvagal theory. And this is Stephen Porges. His theory is about the autonomic nervous system. And he breaks it down when he studied the vagus nerve. The vagus nerve is the 10th cranial and longest nerve in our body. It goes all the way through us. It affects our lower and higher selves. It affects digestion, you know, the sympathetic nervous system, the parasympathetic nervous system. It's everything throughout us. The Kundalini or any type of chanting or gargling, singing affects the vagus nerve because it all comes together pretty much right here in your neck. I know people can't see it. I'm pointing. You can't see it, but I'm going, it's in your neck. So, when you want to, regulate a vagus nerve, chanting is really good, or singing. Or just gargling, you know, you can just gargle, but stimulate that nerve. Mm-hmm. So that's a good way to just maintain your vagus nerve. Keep it healthy on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And who doesn't like to sing in the car? I know I put on some good concerts in the car. And that raises your energy. Speaking of raising your energy, that's something else that I've done in therapy. My therapist will say, pick out a song, whichever song, About Damn Time and Lizzo. That is therapy. I am telling you, that song is therapy. We've done that more than once. And we tap it in. You tap it into your body. You become aware. So the tapping that you do in your body is so that you feel aware in your body. And then you're putting that good feeling of Lizzo or whatever song that you like into your body. You're feeling safe and you're raising your energy. By the end of that one, I was like, yep, don't need you anymore. Goodbye. And dancing is another thing that raises our energy. There are days when that trauma has boomed, come to the forefront in my depression. It's pulling me under. I'm going under the waves. It's pulling me deep. I'm feeling dense. I'm feeling heavy. All of my tools are just a little too far out of reach for me that day. I can't sit down and do my yoga or something. Jump up and down. Literally jump up and down. And just move, just get your body moving. If you can reach for a song, if you can get there, some days it's hard. Just put on a song, put on something, jump up and down. And eventually, hopefully, you can get it moving. You can get that energy, that dense, heavy energy, just a little bit lighter. Hopefully get a little bit better with the energy. Move it out and get a song going. And hopefully you can get moving with your day. If not, you can at least allow yourself to go back to bed and just take that day for yourself. But try to move that energy out first so that you don't get pulled too far under. Adoptees know this one. When you get pulled way, way, way down, you get those negative thought patterns that are telling you you're not worthy, you're not loved, you're a burden, blah, 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 blah. And these are lies. Don't listen to these. These are the lies that, the negative thought patterns that have come into us because of abandonment trauma and not being able to speak truth. So just remember that it's temporary. This is one of my mantras. It might not work for everyone, but one of mine is everything is temporary. Everything is temporary. if I'm in that space, that's what I tell myself. Everything is temporary. And then sure enough, I can make it through to the other side. And if sometimes it's an hour, sometimes it's 3 days, whatever it is, at the end of it, I allow myself to be okay with what happened. And now I can go back to where I was in my natural flow state and move back on. And just forgive yourself for being pulled under.
That's beautiful. And with breath work, what is just an easy thing, way of getting through the breath that you can share with us today?
Yes. Let me give you an example. I don't like to fly. And I just had to fly to the summit I went to. I know logical brains up here telling me every time you've gotten on a plane, you've walked off a plane. Logically, I know that that is okay. My physiology and my body goes, starts screaming and just has its own reaction to it.
Yeah.
So logical brain's like going, we're okay. Body's like, no, we're not. So I start like shaking and stuff, palms starting sweating, you know, it's having its physical reaction. So I'm like, okay, we know this one. So I have a couple of them. There's one that's really easy, and I take my fingers and my thumb, and I just go right down and breathe with the index, the middle finger, the ring finger, and the pinky finger. So it's kind of like this. And I go back. So it's a 4-count breath through my nose. Index, middle, ring, pinky, back, exhale. And I check my shoulders. Always check your shoulders. Make sure they're not up around your ears, because usually in the physiology, they start going up around your ears. Push those shoulders down. I just take that mudra and just focus on it. Maybe I'm looking at something in the room. It could be a color that I like in the airport. Maybe it's a poster across the room, or someone has something pretty clothes on. I did that too. I've done that too. Or they have pretty colored hair. There's been pretty colored hair I've stared at. And I just kind of do that and focus my mind while I'm breathing. You can go 1, 2, 3, 4. And in Kundalini, we go sa ta na ma. Sa ta na ma. So we can do that also, but you can do 1, 2, 3, 4, whatever is easiest. You're just trying to calm your mind and focus on the breath, because once you get yourself back into the body and your breath is calming down, the physiology is going to start going down. Once that sympathetic nervous system's been tapped, that gas pedal's been hit, it takes about 10, 20 minutes for the parasympathetic to calm it back down. So it's easier to try to maintain than it is to let that gas pedal go get hit. But when it does, you will come back. You will come back. There's another one I love doing, which starts with that 4-count breath, that, and then you hold for 4 counts, and then you exhale for 4 counts. Pause for 4 counts. And then inhale for 4 counts. You can either do it as a 4-count, or you can just inhale for 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. Hold. 1, 2, 3, 4. Exhale. 1, 2, 3, 4. Pause. 1, 2, 3, 4. Inhale. 1, 2, 3, 4. That's a box breath. That one they have studied and proven that it will calm you down. So there's a couple of different ones that I play with. Those are just two simple ones. But remember, you've got to calm your mind. So all you're doing with these breaths is you're giving your brain something to focus on. And the breath is how you can easily bring it down, because your energy follows your breath.
I love that. I was going along with you. I think that's a great reminder. Your energy follows your breath.
Yes.
And a lot of us, when we are dealing with high stakes, emotional stakes situations, our breath gets shallow.
Yes.
And we're no longer having diaphragmatic breathing. It's correct. All upper chest, right behind the clavicle, instead of deep into the Mula Bandha. It's
yes.
And it's essential that we are breathing with the full body.
Yes. And that is such a good point, because all of us are under the assumption we know how to breathe.
Yeah.
Right? I did. I totally thought I knew how I was to breathe until I actually learned how to breathe. And then I was like, oh, what was I doing? And you're right. It's right here. We're all breathing right at the top of our lungs and very, very shallow. They did a test, and now I forgot the man's name. If I can find it, I'll send it to you. They blocked their noses. They took, I think, a dozen people, and they blocked their noses, and they were just breathing out of their mouths. And they were supposed to do this, I believe, a month. None of them made it past 2 weeks. Their anxiety shot up so high, they had to end the test. So that's how important being able to breathe through your nose and being able to actually fully breathe can affect our well-being. It truly does affect our well-being. So very much learn how to breathe. However you want to train to breathe, you know, whether you want to be the Olympic athlete. Well, that's what, when you see the Olympic athletes, when they have those oxygen masks and you see them running, that's what they're doing. They're trying to get more air. They're trying to expand their rib cage for more endurance. And Kundalini, I always do a lot of those stretching exercises where you expand the rib cage so that you can get fuller breaths in. Mm-hmm. And it really is for endurance, because our world is stressful, right? And just day to day trying to go through. And toxins we take in with the food, like I was talking about earlier, you know, learning how to eat proper nutritionally and get enough sleep and getting enough water, you know, and sunshine and the things that we need to do, and not letting all the toxicities of, you know, media or whatever it is come into us and start filling our cells. That's when we're going to have a lower density, lower energy, and that's when the tipping point where depression, anxiety, it starts taking hold of us. So as long as we can stay in that easy, neutral flow state, that's good. Happiness can come. That's a higher energy. But people think, I have to be happy all the time. I have to be happy all the time. I'm like, no, you'll burn out. You're going to burn out trying to be happy all the time. It's like, no, just be content, neutral, flow. Yeah. Learn to be in the moment.
So important. And you have so many services to offer. I just want to make sure everyone knows what they are, because I definitely want to tap into some of the things that you do. We talked about a tarot reading. Yes. We talked about a tea leaf reading. Yes. So please share all the things that you can offer folks so that they can go find you and where to find you.
My website is loraegerald.com, LoraeGerald.com. I am the Adopted Chameleon on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter, and Pinterest. I write my blogs as an adoptee. I do have a Patreon, which is my Kundalini yoga. My Patreons get monthly card readings. They get a yearly full reading. I post motivational things. I send them recipes, healthy cooking recipes. I do like short little videos. Patreon just has this new thing now where you can do short little videos too. So I go in there. I talked about time water the other day. I talked about how to do crystals if you wanted to put your crystals out in the moon water. It's just little tips like that. And then they also have full 45-minute videos in there. Right now you can try it for 2 weeks free. Or you can just join a class. I do them Wednesdays and Sundays, 11 a.m. through Zoom. So you can be anywhere and do these. Wednesdays, we do Kundalini to fun pop music. It's more empowering, more solar plexus work, you know, pulling in our personal power and having fun. Sundays, we go inward more, become more aware of how our feelings are. We also have some meetup groups from time to time. And like you said, I do tarot and tea leaf readings. I do those remotely also. What I do is, once you've decided which type of reading you prefer, You've given me permission to tap into your energy. So I do a reading. I take pictures of everything, full descriptions of everything. I always add oracle cards or something. Whatever I'm called, I will add a little extra to it. I send it to the person at that time. We've already decided if they'll look at it. And sometimes they're like, no, I'm good. I don't need to talk to you. Or we'll go through it at that time. We can either Zoom, they can chat, however the communication wants to go at that point. But a lot of people want to just hang on to it for a while. Because once it's done, it's deleted from my files. I no longer have it. So that's something I always like to tell people. Don't come back in a month and go, hey, remember what you said? No, because that was your message. I am just a conduit for your message. It's not going to make sense to me. Hopefully it will make sense to you, because that's what I asked to do, is to give the person that I'm doing the reading, this is for their highest good, not mine. I'm just the conduit that is listening to the energy. It's coming through me. I'm translating it through cards, tea leaves. These are the tools. Then I'm writing it down and telling you what you need at that time. And I'm also an ordained minister and a Reiki master.
Oh, my yes, goodness.
I have married people. That is an experience. And marrying people is, wow, you want to talk about energy? Woo!
I can't even imagine what that would be like. I've never married anyone, but yeah, I can imagine it's a hodgepodge of many things happening there. So this, in closing, I want to ask the question that I ask all of my guests. Lorae, where in your life are you courageous?
Wow. Well, speaking my truth is honestly, to me, being courageous, because it is scary speaking truth. People do not like truth a lot. And a lot of famous people have not survived speaking their truth. So truth can cause a stir, but truth can cause change too. So finding the courage in your own truth and speaking it can save other people and can cause change.
Another beautiful episode. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you to my guest today. If you liked this episode, the best way to support me and this work is to write an iTunes review, a 5-star review. This helps us reach the top of searches and helps more people to find us. And if you personally want to connect, please reach out on Instagram or Facebook. And I have some great resource material on my website at laniceantoinecelli.com. So go on over there too. Until next we meet, go gently and have courage, my love.